translation. Unless the gross materialist develops a sense of loving service unto the Supreme Lord, the seer of both the transcendental and mundane worlds, he should remember or meditate upon the universal form of the Lord at the end of his prescribed duties. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Lord is the seer of all the worlds, both material and transcendental. In other words, the Supreme Lord is the ultimate beneficiary and enjoyer of the worlds, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 5:29. No, it's not said what 5:29 is. I'm sure someone can tell us. Bhaktivam yagitavisham savalokamashram sudhidas. He is the only friend of the living entity, isn't it? And you can become peaceful. That is the peace formula Prabhupada indicated. The peace formula for the world is this verse. The spiritual world is the manifestation of his internal potency, and the material world is a manifestation of his external potency. The living entities are also his marginal potency. And by their own choice, they can live in either the transcendental or material worlds. The material world is not a fit place for living entities because they are spiritually one with the Lord. And in the material world, the living entities become conditioned by the laws and material of the material world. The Lord wants all living entities who are his parts and parcels to live with him in the transcendental world. And for enlightening conditioned souls in the material world, all the Vedas and the revealed scriptures are there expressly to recall the conditioned soul back home, back to Godhead. Unfortunately, the conditioned soul entities, although suffering continually the threefold miseries of conditioned life, are not very serious about going back to Godhead. It is due to their misguided way of life, complicated by sins and virtues. Some of them, who are virtuous by deeds, began to re-establish the lost relation with the Lord, but they are unable to understand the personal feature of the Lord. The real purpose of life is to make contact with the Lord and be engaged in his service. That is the natural position of the living entity, but those who are impersonless and are unable to render any loving service to the Lord have been advised to meditate on the impersonal feature, the virat rup or universal form. Somewhere or other, one must re-establish one's forgotten relation with the Lord if one at all desires to gain real happiness and to reclaim his natural unfettered condition. For the less intelligent beginners, meditation on the impersonal feature, the virat rup, or universal form of the Lord, will gradually qualify one to rise to the personal contact. One is advised herewith to meditate upon the virat rup specified in the previous chapters in order to understand how the different planets, seas, mountains, rivers, birds, beasts, human beings, demigods, and all that we can conceive are but different parts and limbs of the Lord's virat rup form. This sort of thinking is also a type of meditation on the absolute truth, and as soon as such meditation begins, one develops one's godly qualities, and the whole world appears to be happy and peaceful. And as soon as the meditation begins, one develops one's godly qualities, and the whole world appears to be happy and peaceful residence for the people of the world, I see. Without such meditation on God, either personal or impersonal, all good qualities of human beings become covered with misconceptions regarding the constitutional position. And without such advanced knowledge, the whole world becomes a hell for the human beings. Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasri Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Namo Shubhadaya Krishna Prasadaya Burlai, Shumari Shara Gaura Gaura Vrinda, Shwami Sinamani. Namo Shubhadaya Krishna Prasadaya Burlai, Shumari Bhakta Vrinda, Shwami Sinamani. Namaste Sarasati Devam Gauravani Pachane Nivishisha Sunivadi Pustataris Tanane Jai Shri Prabhupada Jagat Guru Save the entire world Hide. So Prabhupada has said many things in this purport, so we can look at some of them. Krishna is the seer of both worlds, both material and transcendental. You know, in the Bhagavad Gita, it is described how Krishna is sitting in the heart. There is the two birds sitting in the heart. One is the super soul, and the other is the soul. So Krishna is witnessing the activities, he's overseeing the activities, and he's permitting the activities to take place. Whether one wants to go to heaven or hell, whether one wants to act piously or impiously, Krishna acts in a neutral way. He does not disturb the independent desires of the living being, because Krishna has expanded himself, become many. And with the purpose of increasing his enjoyment, because Krishna is the supreme autocrat. He is a supreme enjoyer. Supreme autocrat. He can do as he likes. No one can stop Krishna doing as he likes. And everything he does is perfect and for the benefit of all the jivas. And actually, the whole purpose of the creation, as Prabhupada says here, is to try to bring the jiva to his senses and bring him back to his original intention, you could say. The original intention is, why don't you come and join me in the spiritual realm? You have your independence. You have your free will. Now, why don't you submit that free will to me, and then I will exchange love with you, just like we exchange love with so many family and friends. And if we submit to them, if we behave nicely with them, they will reciprocate. As you surrender to me, I reward you accordingly. That happens in our relationships as well, don't you think? Supposing your wife doesn't treat you very nicely, do you think you would treat your wife? Well, you might do. Out of duty, you might do. Or your friend is not treating you well, you may not wish to properly reciprocate with them. Or you may reciprocate with them in such a way as to teach them something. Maybe. You wouldn't, because you're a good person, let's suppose you're a good person, you would not wish them harm. Like a gross materialist, a demoniac person, he simply is only interested in his own benefit. He doesn't care about anybody else. He only cares about his own benefits. Therefore, if someone gets in his way, he will kill him. Bhagavad Gita describes that in the demoniac chapters. So much wealth I have, so much prosperity I have, so much power I have, and my life is going so wonderfully well, and if you get in the way, watch out, because I'll do you in. They have no... I will kill you. You see that in the world today. so many unfortunate situations because the leaders of the world, they're all demons. There's not one pious man among them, I'm afraid to say. They're all crooked from top to bottom. And therefore, the breathing of Vishnu, Mahavishnu is lying in the causal ocean, he's breathing. What is he? He's breathing the Vedic hymns. Sound. The sound of Vishnu is the great benefit for all living entities, and it is the law. It is everything, actually. Therefore, the Christians have the idea from sound. In the beginning, there was God, and the Word was with God. What does that mean? Anyone like to say what that means? Any Christians here? You brought up Christian. What does it mean? In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God. So you are visiting churches and doing your puja.
And try to develop love for God. I was not really into the lecture they did, to be honest.
Nice. Which Italy is that? Which country?
I'm from Spain.
Oh, Spain, España.
Yeah.
Yeah, all over. You see all over the Christian countries. Anyway, in the beginning was the Word was God. Well, I have a translation for that. Would you like to hear it? What is the Vedic translation? Well, it's in the Vedas, it's there actually, because sound, the Mahavishnu is lying and he's sound, the hymns are of sound. Sound is a vibration. Any sound that's made, particularly from a personality, generally has information within it. So the thinking is that from sound comes ether. In the Vedas, you'll see, from sound comes ether, from ether comes... Air. From air comes fire, from fire comes water. So there's these progressive steps. So one can assume that in order for matter to assemble in various ways, sound, vibration, orders come about. Matter does not just come about on its own. It's not an unguided process. Everything is guided. So a tree that grows, a flower that grows, there is a sound in the sense that, and scientists will tell you today, there is coded information. Wherever there's coded information, there must be sound. The originator of the person is there, intelligence. So When Krishna lies in his Mahapurush form and the Vedic hymns, so many sounds are coming, so many orders are coming, including all the Vedas, the Rig Veda, Samar Veda, Tata Veda, all these Vedas are coming. And it is all contained with information and laws which the living entity must submit to. And even if he does not submit to them, he will be forced to submit to them. For his own good, he'll be forced to submit. One cannot live his life any way he pleases. The living entity is always, as we were saying in the beginning, he's guided in the heart by Krishna and he is given just deserts. So this sound, in the beginning there was the Word of God, it is sound vibration. That sound vibration manifests everything. If you want to get into physics, you could, because even the modern physicists can give you some idea of these things. Like they speak about the many possibilities of, in quantum physics, they speak about the many possibilities. Well, what is that many possibilities? And what is beyond quantum physics? Quarks and all these smaller particles. Well, we can perhaps consider that beyond the smallest particle is even smaller, 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 and smaller, and smaller, and smaller, ad infinitum until you get to the subtle energies, and from the subtle ethereal plane, the order of the Lord in the form of sound is manifesting matter in certain ways. Anyway, this is interesting to consider. So, in other words, modern scientists in today's world, they totally agree with the Vedas. Well, they know it or not, they do. There's one Harvard professor called Lisa Randall. She openly speaks. She's in Harvard. She's right in the middle of the American educational system. And she's openly speaking of multi-dimensional space-time, where different laws operate in different places within the universe. She concedes the idea that within some aspects of the universe, which cannot be seen by our gross material senses, actually they call it, I think, dark matter, isn't it? Yeah. Because in the universe, we can only see 5% of what, only 5% of the universe is known to us by our material senses. 49% is dark matter, and about 50 or 60% is dark energy. So Lisa Randall, she says, this dark matter means that we just cannot see it, but it's existing. This is all there in the Bhagavad Gita as well. There's the higher, lower, and middle planetary systems. There's so many things that the Vedas speak of. But we cannot detect it with our material senses. Just like this Earth planet. There is, to us at least, it looks in certain ways. In fact, our whole conception of life, when we view life, we are completely conditioned by our previous karmas. We're attracted and repulsed by certain things, we take certain views in our subjectivity, and we become convinced of so many things. We become convinced of an illusion, so much so. And this is all spoken about here. This is Krishna. He's so intelligent. He's so unbelievably intelligent. That's why it says Suprimota cracked. Way beyond anything that any man can conceive of. This is Krishna. So we have to understand who Krishna is. So our Krishna conscious movement is based on the premise of these three verses, you could say. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchitananda Vigraha Sisi Radha Gokananda Titanata Hanuma Chichinanda Vaidhidha. Should Krishna's peacock feather be an angle of 35, 40 degrees, 50? I don't know, is that correct? Should it not be Ujjayi? Should it be up or should it be like this? I don't know. Any people are expert in rafts of Krishna here? I don't know. I'm not Pujari. Maybe you should. So, Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchitananda Vigraha Anadi Adi Govinda Sarvakara Kara. Krishna is the cause of all causes. He's the Ishvara, he's the supreme controller. He's the supreme Vigraha, the most beautiful of all forms. So Chaitanas Chaitananam, Krishna is the supreme eternal. This is Krishna's position. He's the supreme eternal. And we are the minor eternals. Chaitana, Chaitananam. And Jivara Srupaya, Krishna Nitya Das, Krishna Tatastha Shakti, Beda Beda Vikash. Krishna Prabhupada mentions Tatastha Shakti here. This is our position. So to gain knowledge of this position, how are we going to do that? This is our situation. We may know intellectually of these things, but how are we going to properly understand Krishna? And Prabhupada says in the purport, to understand Krishna in his two-armed Shamsunda form, displaying the 64 excellences, Dear Lalita, Krishna is known in four ways, Dear Lalita, Dear Prashant, Dear Datta, and Dear Datta. So Krishna has many manifestations of himself in his personal form. Depends where he is. If he's speaking to Arjuna, he's in one form. If he's speaking to gopis, he's in another form. That form is described all over the Vedas, particularly the 10th canto of the Vedas, and therefore Prabhupada in the purport here indicates that it's not so easy to understand the two-handed form of Krishna. Therefore, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Avajanti mamudha manasimtami. It's difficult to have fools divide me. When I descend to this form, when I display my two-handed form, fools divide me. I do not reveal myself to such personalities. So it's not so easy to understand Krishna in his full capacities, because Krishna is everything. He manifests in so many different ways. We were saying, in this material world, Prabhupada speaks here, that both material and transcendental worlds are Krishna's energy. Well, every single atom belongs to Krishna. He is every atom is meant for his pleasure. And he's fully conscious of every single atom. Every atom in all over the billions of universes, Krishna's, he has instant communication with. There's another scientific term. They have this idea of instant communication. They can't work out how one particle can instantly communicate with another particle billions of miles away, although theoretically it's possible. The modern physicists are thinking about this matter, and actually I think Einstein, he called it spooky action at a distance. That was how he conceived of it. Spooky action at a distance. But no, Krishna, no problem for him. He is, it's all his energy. He knows what one part of the energy is doing. Therefore, in the Vedas it says not even a blade of grass moves without Krishna knowing it. Why wouldn't he? It's all his energy. You are fully conscious of all the things in your body, are you not? Not everything, actually, because you don't know how your fingernails are growing. Do you know how your fingernails are growing? Do you know how your hair is growing? You don't know. Huh? You don't know how your hair is. You know very little, actually. In fact, we know very little at all when you think about it. So, but Krishna knows everything. He knows how the fingernails grow. He knows how the hair grows. He knows how your food digests. He knows everything you're thinking and what you want. And he's already preparing the next body for you, whether it be spiritual or material. Such is the power of Krishna in the material and spiritual worlds. In fact, there is in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, there is one part where it said that there was one wasp and it captured a little worm or some kind of creature and took it to its nest. So this wasp was captivated, it was captured, and it began to become very fearful and wanting to know how to get out of his situation that he found itself in. So he began to meditate on the wasp. And by meditating on that wasp, he began to acquire the powers of the wasp. And I think in the Bhagavatam, I haven't read it recently, but I think even practically speaking, he gains the form of the wasp. So this indicates another aspect of spiritual life. Whatever you think or whatever you want, you'll become. And we've said so many times, because we always like to compare Krishna consciousness to science. It's a science. Nothing the scientists say differs from the Bhagavatam. So again, there is indications in modern physics that consciousness reflects matter. So whatever you think of, whatever you will become. So if you want, therefore Krishna says, Mamana Bhamat Bhakto Majati Namaskuru, become my devotee, worship me, think of me. Yoginam apishravasham makkatena ratmanaha shravan, one who does my bhajan, who renders service to me, thinks of me within himself, he comes to me. So we should have faith in this. Here we are, our consciousness stuck inside this particular body at this particular moment. What is the whole science? Just move yourself out of that body and go into another body and try to acquire a spiritual body. How do you acquire a spiritual body? Well, you must associate with sadhus who have acquired their spiritual body. Nitya-siddha devotee. Nitya-siddha Krishna prema sattva kavanoya shravanada shudra. I won't get into debate about Nitya-siddha. Nitya-siddha Krishna. Those who are Nitya-siddhas have Krishna prema. Is it? Anyone who has Krishna, Nitya-siddha. And Prabhupada just saying one purport. Those who are preaching Krishna consciousness all over the world, you should regard them as Nitya-siddhas. They're eternally liberated. They've already acquired their spiritual body. So these personalities who are in such high states of mind, they're always thinking of Krishna. They know everything about Krishna. They're always meditating on Krishna. Like the wasp, that little worm that's captured by that wasp, he is always thinking of how to gain this wasp. He's meditating on this wasp so much he becomes the wasp. So Krishna says, if you think of me, you will come to me. There was once one disabled boy. He could not move. He was in a hospital bed or some confined. But he was very happy and peaceful in his life. And someone was asking, why are you so happy? Why are you so peaceful? And he said, well, I'm always thinking of other things. I'm not thinking of my condition. I'm thinking of other things. You know, whatever that might be. But he could liberate himself from his gross body. So we should not be at all affected by our current circumstances. And if we want to, we could get into real depression about our current circumstances in so many different ways, if we wanted to. According to our karma, somebody might be very joyful, as Prabhupada says here, wasn't it? Whether you have good piety, was he say something? Those are sins or virtues. Those who are virtuous, well, they're very wonderful things, and they become captivated by the opulence of their condition. And that's okay. That is their just deserts. But it is not the goal of life to acquire much wealth, much fame, much prestige, much education, much beauty, much knowledge. That's not the goal of life. Goal of life is to acquire sweetness. The sweetness of bhakti ras, which is had by associating with Krishna's devotee. Because that is really what Krishna is all about. He's the sweet of the sweet. Sweet is of the sweet, he said. That is Krishna's position. In the Vaikuntha planets, Prabhupada says, if you practice Vaidhi Bhakti, for instance, if you do Vaidhi Vidhi, whatever, if you practice just Vaidhi Bhakti, you will go to Vaikuntha planets. If you practice Raghunuga Bhakti, you will go But it's not just a question of one day you wake up doing Vaidhi, the next day you wake up doing it. There's lots of gradual steps. So the point is, we have to become emotion, raga, the emotion. We have to understand the emotions and the sweetness of Krishna and the pure Vaishnavas. Understand the psychology, the devotion, the bhakti, the dedication and devotion. As one of the acharyas say, no provincial interest, no localized interest, only interest in Krishna. Selflessness. This is had by serving His Divine Grace, E.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So it's understood by our current ISKCON leaders that if you serve the Hare Krishna movement very nicely, you will automatically become a pure devotee. If you serve Prabhupada's mission properly, giving everything to him, everything you have, whatever you have, and you should develop everything you have to the maximum, you will automatically acquire sweetness of the heart. Shushusha saradara shah vastu deva kataru chi sayam hatseva vipra punya tirtanasya. If you serve a devotee who is a very high character, tikshva kurunagaha surida sivarahanama jatasavata sanda sadeva sarabhushna, very high characteristics. His character is perfect. If you see a pure devotee, you'll see his characteristics are perfect. There's nothing in him that is not perfect. Now, this is the condition of the pure Vaishnavas. So if we serve such devotees within the international side of Krishna consciousness, because Prabhupada, you know, we fully appreciate and give respect to all missions, Gaudiya Vaishnava. We are Gaudiya Vaishnavas. There's so many Gaudiya Vaishnavas, isn't it? It's not that ISKCON is separate from Gaudiya Vaishnavas. ISKCON is just it's also Gaudiya Vaishnavas. So many other Gaudiya Vaishnavas there. But this particular mission is a very highly organized mission. There's no other Gaudiya Vaishnava mission that's organized like this one. Because why? Because Prabhupada is very intelligent. You can't conceive how intelligent Prabhupada was. Where is that intelligence coming from? Well, you know, this is debate. Nitya Siddha Krishna, he's Nitya Siddha, he's descended, he is, or is he empowered? Well, both things are going on, probably, I don't know. But certainly Krishna is in the heart, and one of his close associates, before he came to the West, he detected Prabhupada's mood when he returned, and he thought, what has gotten into you? He thought of that. What has gotten into you? Something's changed in you. What is it you've... So Krishna is, it's an ongoing, and that's, I say this because we ourselves should never limit ourselves. We should never limit ourselves because we are the most materially and spiritually, we're always moving. We're moving spiritually, we're moving materially. No one's static, no one should be put in a box. It's very conditioned to put, so, oh, he's like this, he's like that, he's like, this is like, stifles us, it stifles everything. Ever new, even we are ever new in one sense. Because we're always, isn't it? It's kind of strange, really, because, like, for instance, if somebody hadn't sinned for some time, you might see them and they might start sparking up a conversation. You might think, wow, you didn't know I was going to say that. You don't know what I'm going to say, do you? I don't know what you're going to say. You know what I'm going to think or what. It's very exciting, actually. The whole concept of life is very exciting. And this is the origins of this, of course, is in the spiritual world. And in the spiritual world, all the things you're going to say and do are done in great love and not in a conditioned way. Unfortunately, currently, as said here, the whole world's become hellish. Why has it become hellish? It's such a wonderful life. Why is the world so hellish? I mean, you can see... For instance, China has just declared, yes, in 2060 we're going to clean up our industrial act. Wow, great. I mean, you know, Prabhupada speaks about post-dated checks, that's ridiculous. And then Saudi Arabia, yes, by 2050 we will also clean up our... And all this posturing is going on, the so-called COP. These guys are all demons, they're all fools and rascals. Take what Prabhupada said to be true, they're all fools. They're Vaishyas at most. They're one Kshatriya and one Brahmin among them. They're causing such hellish conditions. How can you expect an ignorant man to know how everyone can be happy? There's no way. All these politicians, they're all foolish rascals. They have no idea of anything of life, what life's purpose is. They're simply self-centered people who are living for the moment. That's to be fact. And it goes on in every single field, political field, economic field, scientific field, all fields. They're all rascals. We should know. But we should know, and I'm saying we should really know. My daughter recently got Brahmin initiation, so I was there. She constantly gave her Brahmin. And I said to Maharaj, surely the Brahmin has to know everything. For instance, you know the crooked political systems and the crooked economic systems. How is it they are crooked? We have to know. How are they crooked? What's going on? You see, some of these great industrialists and their economic strategies, they are very, very crooked. You can't detect how they're cheating. In the sense, for instance, the stock market, they have this idea of instant transactions. You can buy and sell a share in microseconds. So there's inside information coming to you from cheaters. Such and such company is going to do this, such company is going to do this. So if you know the right people, you know, and then you can do your trading. You make yourself millions of pounds in one day, other people have lost a lot of money. Who cares? I've got my money. And for instance, commodity markets are there. They're buying up all the cocoa, all the rice, all the oil, all the gas. These big demons are doing such things. And then later on, everyone has to pay more for them. This is again crookedness. Do you think that the Vedas would allow such things? You think the Mahavishnu who lies in the causal ocean breathing out the Vedic laws would allow such things? No. That is not Vedic philosophy. So you understand Krishna consciousness includes everything, the social sciences, everything is included, the economic systems, it's all that. What time is this class supposed to finish? Is it 8:30? Is it? Yeah. So much to say on this topic. Just last thing, I just a couple of more points. The interesting on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, of course, Arjuna. He was having Sakiras. He was a friend of Krishna. But the interesting thing was, he had a very sweet relationship with Krishna, but in order for him to see the universal root form, he had to like bring that sweetness away a little bit, and Krishna's great universal form came about. The root form, or you could say the universal form, when Krishna and Arjuna saw everything. He saw time, he saw, of course it wasn't like this type of Viratrup, it was a greater display of the Viratrup. But still, in order to see that, Krishna covered his sweetness and he increased his Eshvara, he increased his powers. So for the great Supreme Personality of Godhead to come for us, such a minute living entity as we are, in order for the Supreme Lord to come before us, he has to increase his sweetness and decrease his powers. So this is going on in the Vedas. All these things are described. Actually, today it's much easier to understand Krishna than when this 5,000 years ago, or even 200 years ago, or even 100 years ago, or even 50 years ago, even 40 years ago. It's much easier to understand the root form. It's much easier to understand the intelligent design, you could say, of the universe, because modern science is doing a wonderful job by revealing Krishna's intelligent design everywhere. So wonderful. Thank you, scientists. We love scientists who present objective science. We don't like their subjective interpretations, but we like their objective science. So today, if you study science, you'll see it's very, very easy to understand Krishna is there in everything, you know, like DNA code, 100, you know, whenever you see a code 10100 on your computer, you immediately assume So the A's, C's, T's, and G's in the DNA makeup that form bodies, that create bodies in certain ways, it's codes. And therefore, Bill Gates, he said, actually, this DNA system is like an amazing computer. It is so detailed, but something way beyond any computer can ever conceive of. But a similar idea is there. So this is recognized in all modern scientists. And so there's no contradiction between science and religion. Can anyone think that there is a... is there any contradiction between science and religion? In what the Bhagavatam says and what science... Is there any contradiction? Can anyone say? You think the scientists totally agree with everything in this book? Well, I can tell you, there is no contradiction. It's just a question of understanding it. Therefore, the sadhu, he understands. So the essence of spiritual life is to find a sadhu who fully understands Krishna and Krishna's energy and accepts them as they are. He does not subjectify. He just immediately accepts what Krishna says. Anyway, so many things can be said, but we're limited for time. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any comments, questions, any challenges to what we're saying? Yes?
This last point you said, science,
there's no contradiction. No contradiction.
But there are many scientific theories which are proved to be false. Like every 10 years, almost opposite things are. Like, so we cannot say, what is actually science?
So many scientific are proved to be false.
Proofs are proved to be totally wrong.
They're proved to be wrong.
Every decade, they realize actually this was wrong.
Yeah.
So you cannot say, what is science anyway?
Yes, it's true. Because what's wrong is not what they objectively see, but what's wrong is their interpretation of what they see. That's all. Because what they're looking at, science, is the world around them. So, if they look at the world around them and they actually give an objective view to it, you know, there's no problem. It's only when they, you know, the science that starts to, like for instance Charles Darwin with his concept that there is one simple cell in a primordial soup that expanded, and that was the cause of speciation. Well, that was a speculation. And this in that sense, you could say that theory is wrong. But even today, that wrong theory is taught in all universities all over the world. So it's still not recognized. Although it's weakening, that theory is weakening, because there's so many holes in the theory. But what I'm saying is that objective science. If you look, for instance, now with the DNA and the structures of a body, and is there any stages? Can we see in the evolutionary track different species changing? No, there's no single cell slowly moving to a human being. If you go to the Science Museum, the Natural History Museum, first thing you'll see is apes turning into men. That's the first thing that hits you. All the children go in there and they see this. And they have one exhibit called Lucy, and they say, oh, this Lucy is the in-between. But no, Lucy's gait is exactly like an ape's gait, you know, the way she stands. So it's simply all speculation, that's all. So we have to discriminate what is real knowledge and what is someone's subjective idea. But real science and what is in the Bhagavatam is absolutely bang on. It's the same. Jai Shri Prabhupada, Guru, save the entire world. Ki Jai.